Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14. Three modes of material nature, text number 11. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Prakasha upajayate. Jnanam yadatata vidyad. Jnanam yadatata vidyad. Divridham sattvamityuta. Divridham sattvamityuta. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Jnanam yadatadar vidyad. Vivridham sattvamityuta. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Jnanam yadatadar vidyad. Vividham sattvam ityuta. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Gadam yadatada vidyad. Vividham sattvam ityuta. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Jnanam yadatada vidyad. Vividham sattvam ityuta. Ladies. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Jnanam yadatada vidyad. Vividham sattvam ityuta. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin. Prakasha upajayate. Jnanam yadatada vidyad. Vividham sattvam ityuta. Sarvadvareshu. In all the gates. Dehi asmin. In this body. Prakashaha. The quality of illumination. Upajayate. Develops. Jnanam. Knowledge. Yada. When. Tada. At that time. Vidyat. No. Vividham. Increased. Sattvam. Mode of goodness. Iti uta. Thus it is said. Translation. The manifestation of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Purport. There are nine gates in the body. Two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, the mouth, the genitals, and the anus. When every gate is illuminated by the symptoms of goodness, it should be understood that one has developed the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one can see things in the right position, one can hear things in the right position, and one can taste things in the right position. One becomes cleansed inside and outside. In every gate there is development of the symptoms of happiness, and that is the position of goodness. Omagara Timananda Shaganan Shana Shalaka Chakshin Militamina Tisman Shugaravinamaha Sri Chaitanya Manobisam Sapitamina Bhutale Swam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Swapatantikam. Whenever I come across this verse, I remember the first time that I heard this verse in a class. The temple president was giving the class. And he recited the verse, and then somebody in the class asked him, "What does that mean?" And the temple president said, he laughed and he said, "I don't know." So I've pondered this question many times over the years. What does it actually mean? And basically it means that when the, at least this is my understanding, okay? And this is based on Prabhupada's purport, that when the body is functioning properly, when the life airs are adjusted, when the body is regulated, if you go to sleep at the same time, if you get up at the same time, if you eat at the same time, when you do those things, the body develops a harmony and functions in a very nice way. So that, and I think there's some aspect of Ayurveda with this also. That according to Ayurveda, there's different symptoms in the body for a person in different modes of nature. Goodness, passion, or ignorance. And I take it that this has something to do with Ayurveda. But the basic idea is that if one is properly regulated, or let's say when one is situated in goodness, the body will function in a very nice way. Any questions? We'll go on to the next sloka. Yes, no? Yeah. I know your question. What does that mean? You have a question or no? When you're regulated. Okay. When you're regulated. Okay. Yeah. So when everything is working the way it should be working. Okay. This is sattva. Okay, the body gets out of order when there's, okay, if you do things in sattva gun, in time and so on, the body naturally will be healthy. If you do things in the wrong time, if you stress the body in different ways, then the body, things don't work properly. Okay, then you're irregular in your bowel movements perhaps. Okay, you have problems with, you know, the different gates, whatever they might be, you know, you've got mucus coming out of your nose or phlegm in your throat or, you know, you can't hear, like that. So this is the idea. Okay? Text number 12. Prakasho pravritischa pramado mohaivacha Tamasitani Jayante Vividhe Guru Nandana. Translation, when there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. Now, just compare that to the previous verse, okay? So when there's an increase in... Oh, I'm sorry, I read the wrong one. Oops, sorry. Okay. Next one. Let's start over. Lobha pravrittir arambha karmanam asamaspriha rajasyetani jayante vividhe bharatarshaba. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. Okay, and then The third one about tamagun, when there's an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, illusion, madness, and illusion are manifested. So just to clarify this one or shed some light on this sloka about goodness, compare what is the result when one, when there's too much rajas or too much tamas. Huh? Too much rajas, great activity, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, uncontrollable desire. In other words, the body is and the mind are disturbed. And then when there's too much ignorance, darkness and inertia, madness and illusion are manifest. So, I think, the second two verses, they help illuminate the first one. So let's read the purport to Rajagun. One in the mode of passion is never satisfied with the position he has already acquired. He hankers to increase his position. If he wants to construct a residential house, he tries to have his best to have a palatial house, as if he would be able to reside in that house eternally. And he develops a great hankering for sense gratification. There is no end to sense gratification. He always wants to remain with his family and in his house and continue the process of sense gratification. There is no cessation of all this. All these symptoms should be understood as characteristic of the mode of passion. In the purport for the mode of ignorance, when there is no illumination, knowledge is absent. One in the mode of ignorance does not work by any regulative principle. He wants to act whimsically for no purpose. Even though he has the capacity to work, he makes no endeavor. This is called illusion. Although consciousness is going on, life is inactive. These are the symptoms of one who is conquered by ignorance. So, these are the symptoms of the gunas. Sattva means peacefulness. Rajas means uncontrollable desire, increasing, unlimited desire. And tamas means illusion, madness, inertia, and destruction. Or degradation, destruction, delusion, all the D words. There's a lot of D words go for that somehow. So one can, now we have to remember these act both as cause and effect. By associating with things in tamagun, one develops the qualities of tamagun. And then by developing those qualities, one desires to associate with the things in tamagun. Okay, so one gets caught up in whatever guna, in rajas and tamas and sattva, like this. The of course, modern civilization is predominantly in rajas and tamas. It's actually arranged that way by the economic system so that everybody has to continually get more money. Get and spend, right? So the system is set up so that nobody can sit peacefully, but you have to continually be working to get more money because as soon as you get it, of course, you're going to lose it by getting what you need to live. And the powers that be, they figured out a very clever way to have that their hand in that stream of money so that as it goes into your hand or out of your hand, they're taking something out of it. They're very clever. If you want to know the details, read my book. It's all there. But the point of rajas, in the beginning it's very nice, and it seems like it should be nice. But in the end it's like poison. The problem is that people cannot connect the dots. They, for example, so our culture is mainly in Rajagun, and there's many, many people who cannot function within the society, right? So they go to the psychiatrist and they tell them, I can't deal with this. So he gives them some pill, right? So that they can become normal again. So normal means what is going on in society today. And so everybody's supposed to adjust themselves to fit in to modern society. But actually the fact of the matter is this, today's society is crazy and it's only the sane people who can't fit in. So they give them a pill to make them crazy so that they can fit in. This is what we have in the world today. They have no way of understanding what should be done and what should not be done. This is the symptom of tamagun. And they think what is right is wrong and what is wrong is right. And you can see it as clear as anything just by observing what's going on in the world today. So the fact of the matter is the whole arrangement is crazy. And people should stop trying to live in a crazy way and should try to live in a sane way called Manashram Dharma. And we should be creating a program like that to teach everyone the world is crazy. Huh? We used to have a brochure, a little pamphlet that we would hand out. Who is crazy? Do you still have that? Do you have that? No? It came about because there was some psychologist or somebody who was made some statements that all these cult followers, that they were all crazy. So Prabhupada told the devotees we should write something, a rebuttal to this. And so they published it as a small booklet that we would hand out on Sankirtan. Who is crazy? And it was a very direct challenge to modern civilization, that the way this civilization is oriented and the way it's run is insane. I think I told you a couple weeks ago or last week I saw some pictures of, was it Hong Kong? And all the high-rise buildings. I mean, there is like dozens and dozens of high-rise buildings of just flats, one above the other for 50, 60, 100 and more stories. Dozens of these buildings. And you look at these pictures and in one sense it's kind of interesting to see. But what I was thinking when I saw them was all those people trying to go down out of those buildings at 8 o'clock in the morning. It must be insane. You know, it's just crazy. You know, everybody tries to leave and go to one, you know, go to some place at the same time. It's just, why, you know, especially now considering that, you know, with modern communications and so on, things don't have to be that way. Originally, the towns grew up along trade routes, that there was somebody taking, you know, something from this city where they were created to that place, and another one going from this way to that way, and where those roads would cross, a city would spring up. Or in port towns, and generally the cities came in places where there was commerce going on, where the goods were coming from one place and being distributed. So cities spring up because people who transport the goods, they need accommodation, they need food and so on, and so then a local economy develops from that. But again, this is Rajagun because people are not producing what they need themselves. In the Vedic culture, everything would be produced locally. Now, locally doesn't mean just in your own village. Locally means in an area that you can cover by one day's travel by ox cart. Okay. Actually, this is another way of that the cities would spring up, depending on the mode of transportation. So, in the early days when people just traveled by ox cart, how far could an ox go in one day? Well, they travel about 2 miles an hour, and so one day there would be cover about 20 miles. So every 20 miles or so, there'd be intersections and crossroads, and there'd be some little local village would spring up. Not a big place because there wasn't many people traveling. Then when the horse came about, this is... Now, of course, travel by ox is travel in sattvagun. Travel by horse is rajagun. You know, giddy up. And what's a horse go? 20 miles an hour? Something like that? Any horsemen? Okay, say it's 20 miles an hour. I don't know. So a horse goes 20 miles an hour in one day. So 8 hours, 20 miles. So every 160 miles. So there's a city, something like that. And then comes along the automobile going 60 miles an hour. And so what it can cover in a day, 60 times 8, 480, so 500 miles. So what happens is, if you look on the old maps, there was many, many more small towns and villages that were there to accommodate the people who are traveling the distance that they could cover in one day. And as the mode of transportation changed, then those places would die out, and you got bigger cities that were, according to the present mode of transportation. And so we have, like today, we have major, major cities, you know, megalopolises, that are, of course, you know, we don't just have cars today, we have, airplanes. So everything changes like that. But, the point is that people no longer produce what they need. And consequently, they have to travel so far. So now, you know, there's a big thing that we have driverless vehicles. And in the United States, they're experimenting with big trucks to, you know, the big semi-trucks that carry all the goods. They have driverless trucks for that. Once they get them on the road, they can stay in the lane and just go the speed limit. And, you know, they got to figure it out when the truck has to brake or whatever. So the question comes, you know, what's going to happen with all the men who drive the trucks? Because this is the largest, the highest number of, highest occupation, right? More people drive trucks in the United States than any other job. So if robots start driving the trucks, then what are all these people going to do? So, well, maybe they'll decide to live a simple life of Vanashram Dharma. Why work? Right? I don't know. This is going to be a big challenge. Huh? They say that within 5 years, 20 to 25% of the jobs are going to be lost to robotics. That's a huge change in 5 years. This means people are superfluous. People have nothing to do. And of course, the way the governments are doing now, then the governments aren't going to come up with aid programs for them. So I think it's actually a good time for promoting some idea about Vanashram culture, about what are the people supposed to do? Well, how about just living a simple life on the land? Doesn't that sound nice? You know, forget about working. Just have your hectare of land, grow potatoes, and sit down in the evening and chant Hare Krishna, you know, come over to the neighbor's house for bhajan. I think it's a great idea. Because otherwise, what are the people going to do? You know, the crazy powers that be, they have this idea called eugenics, right, where they want to kill everybody. That's been going on for a long time, actually, for at least 100 years. They have this idea, well, we don't need all these people. Let's just kill them all, right? But so they try to invent diseases like that. They've invented AIDS and these different flus, but despite their efforts to kill, they're not so good at it. And they've tried to prevent people from being born too, but they're not very good at that. Still the population is increasing. So there's some things they can't control. But anyway, there's no sanity in modern civilization because they are covered with tamagun. They're doing exactly what's wrong. And so who's going to show the way? Huh? Yeah, raise your hand. It has to be us. Huh? Nobody else can do it. How to live a sane life? Huh? Well, the first thing is you have to come to sattva. Then the fever of passion dies down and you can just relax and be peaceful and do only what is necessary. Like I gave the example, I think, last week. If you're planting potatoes, how many potatoes are you going to plant if you're just going to grow potatoes to eat? Well, you grow as many potatoes as you need till get you through next year, maybe 25% extra. And at the end of the year, you can trade those if they're still good or plant them. But if you're growing potatoes for money, how many do you plant? As many as you can, right? Because your motivation is different. So passion unnecessarily increases the amount of work, whereas sattva reduces or minimizes the amount of work to what's actually necessary. So people need to learn sattva. The solution to the problems is sattva. The solution to the environmental problem is sattva. The solution to the transportation energy problem is sattva. The solution to the unemployment problem is sattva. Sattva guna is the solution to all the problems of modern civilization, which are created because they don't have any sattva. All they have is rajas and tamas. And so they're making all these problems and they're thinking, gosh, what do we do? Oh, and they come up with some solution which is more rajas and tamas and exacerbates the problem. So we should be speaking about these things. Find a venue and go speak about these things. We used to go to the universities when I was a new devotee. We would go to, sometimes there was a science lecture or something like that, and we would go and challenge whoever was speaking. Hey, well, you guys are doing it all wrong, you know. I'd go to the universities like that. So you can do that. But we should come up with a plan, a platform, a scheme showing how to solve all the problems of modern civilization in a way. I mean, the thing is, sattva guna is the panacea. It actually solves all the problems together. You don't have to have a separate solution for the rivers or for the forests or for the oceans or for the jobs or for the... It solves all the problems together, sattva guna. Just come to sattva guna. Now, the problem is that for a person who's in rajagun or tamagun, sattva guna... It's boring, right? What am I supposed to do? Meditate? Are you serious? Come on. And they think like that. Meditation. That's boring. Or they could do hatha yoga, right? That's another way. Nah. That's for sissies or something. Kind of pump iron. In any way that they can come to sattva, it would be good. Anyway, sattva is like poison in the beginning, but in the end it becomes like nectar. Any of you do hatha yoga? Who does hatha yoga? Come on, you gotta get with it. It's the yoga age. So if you do hatha yoga, when you stretch your muscles that haven't been stretched in a long time, it hurts. It's painful, right? So a lot of people say, well, let me try something else. But if you stick with it, you actually come to the point where that same pain, you'll experience it as pleasurable. It's a fact. Same pain, same sensation. In the beginning, it's like poison. In the end, it's like nectar. And hatha yoga is actually a wonderful way to experience that. So everything about sattva is like that too. In the beginning, it's distasteful. So this is the problem, that for people who are in rajagun and tamagun, which is everybody, how are they going to come to sattva guna? Well, they have to have some motivation, and if they understand that that's the solution to the problems in a way that is actually agreeable, that it's a win-win-win situation, then maybe they can be motivated to take it up. There was one devotee in the United States. His name is Dhir Govinda Das, or David Wolf. Anybody know that name? David Wolf. Anyway, he comes to Europe now and again. He does a counseling seminar. He has an institute called Satvatov Institute. Anyway, for his PhD thesis, he studied the influence of chanting Hare Krishna on the gunas. So he created what was called the Vedic Personality Index, or Guna Personality Index, one or the other. And whereby, by asking a series of lifestyle questions, he could give a quantitative numeric number to a person's gunas. So, okay, if you go to sleep at this time, you eat this kind of food, you watch these kind of movies, you do that kind of work and so on like that. So he came up with a number that would be statistically representative. And then he had different groups of volunteers from the university. Some were chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra two times a day for 10 minutes, like that, maybe for a month or 2 months. Another group was chanting a meaningless mantra, something like things go better with Coca-Cola. And then the third group was chanting no mantra, the control group. And so he gave them the test before and after, and what he found was that the ones who were chanting Hare Krishna mantra, that there was less tamagun and more sattvagun. So statistically, people were coming higher in the gunas. There's another study that was done, I think, in the 60s by a group from India who were promoting Hatha Yoga. And they also did a similar thing. They created a personality index with the gunas. And they had people doing Hatha Yoga for some period of time, and they tested them before and after. And they saw that by doing, let's say, the influence of doing Hatha Yoga was that people became more sattvic. So, no surprise, right? So these are statistically significant, meaningful results. David Wolf got his PhD on the basis of that one. And they can be used to promote this idea that this is the solution to the problems of modern society. And if any of you are inclined like that, I would urge you to write a paper, write a book, do something, and go out there and push the idea. Get the government behind it to somehow or other fund some of these activities. They could do, in some schools they have children doing Hatha Yoga. It was interesting, in the United States, some Christian ministers came out against, there's too much Hatha Yoga going on. This is from the devil. Seriously. So, and of course, you know, there was, this past year was World Hatha Yoga Day, right? World Yoga Day, remember that? Everybody around the world was doing a Surya Namaskar or something like that. Anyway, it's the panacea for all the problems of the world, sattva-gun. Comments or questions? Yes.
One guy in Sankirtan said to me today, do you have some more practical books? I have other books that have some practical, but I didn't know how to give him on the...
Sell him my book. Cookbook.
Yeah.
Practical. Well, what you have to do is convince them this is the most practical. Why? Because it gives the most practical result. Right? What are you doing? You challenge them. What are you doing? What do you want from life? Now, any person but a fool is going to say, I want to be happy. You know, say, do you want to be happy? You know, is that acceptable as a goal for life? Well, then how do you become happy? Huh? You have to know how to become happy. And the problem is, you're chasing the wrong thing. What you're chasing is in Rajagun, and you're going to wind up unhappy. Huh? Ask your dad. Right? They had a lot of books that came out, written by the old gray men, the gray-haired men. that they have been promised this bill of goods, right? If you be a good citizen, you pay your taxes, you try to, you know, serve your country, in the military, you do all the things that you're supposed to do, and then life is supposed to be nice. Well, this was when I was a college student. They were writing this book called The Graying of America. And the guy was saying, it's a lie. It's not like that. They're telling us all these things, but there's no payoff. Instead of being happy, we're unhappy. Well, so you learn some things like this, and then you can defeat this argument. That you're not going to find happiness. You're going to find misery. Unless you actually know who you are. So therefore, this book is the most practical book. Take it and read some of it. Come over and discuss with me. If you don't agree, if you don't understand, I'll get somebody to speak with you, and we'll help you understand that this is the most practical book. You have to give them a motivation. Why is it practical? Oh, it's about yoga. Why is that practical? Because you're not the body. That's why. You think you're the body, and what do you want? What's practical? How am I going to make more money? How am I going to have better sex life? This is what people want. This is what sells in all the other books. But they're being sold a bill of goods. They're being cheated. So this is the most practical book. So you should sit and you should prepare some answers for such questions. So next time you encounter somebody like this, you can chop them down with your sword of knowledge. Yes.
Still use more hand power than like we use more machine power.
They still use more hand power?
Yeah,
it's amazing to see. I was staying in one village near Puri. And somebody in the village was having a house built. And so some carpenters came to make the doors for the house. And, you know, here in the States, you know, what would happen is some truck would deliver some doors that are already made, and the carpenter would just hang them up. But there's the carpenter showed up with about 10 planks of wood, about this wide and, you know, 8 feet long. They were not straight. And they had for tools, they had a saw, they had a chisel, they had a hammer, and they had a drill that they did by hand. No, not even like that. No, with a string. And they made beautiful doors. I mean, really first class craftsmanship. It was really nice to see. I was amazed. So I think it's wonderful. Yeah, this is real skill.
And also then when they went to these tractors, they were small unemployed people.
Yeah, and then they commit suicide also. They become unemployed. But the government of India stepped in and told Monsanto they have to reduce their profits. Otherwise get out of India. That just happened yesterday, so. Maybe Monsanto will leave India. That'd be the best thing that ever happened. Yeah, anyway, all the solutions of modern society simply create more problems. Don't trust it. If it's not in Sattvagun, don't trust it. Simple motto.
Just say no.
They don't know. They have no idea. New, better, improved. No, the motto should be old-fashioned. Do it the old-fashioned way. That's the best one. What? Old-fashioned. So, something else?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada said that this always we want to do something new, that's the problem of the Western people.
Yeah. Changing things. Well, I feel the same way now that I'm Prabhupada's age. Oh, everything on the phone, they always want to update your apps and change everything. I don't like that either. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.